Conrad, Arturo, and Kingman returned to the settlement, where Selena had supper ready for them. Conrad washed up and put on a clean shirt before he sat down to eat. His nerves had settled down, and he felt fairly good, although he was still worried about what Hyssop and Leatherwood were planning. Chances were it would be a straightforward attack, but Conrad couldn't rule out some sort of surprise. Both men were cunning enemies. After supper, Kingman turned to Conrad again.
I think I'll ride back up to the pass and make sure the guards are staying alert.
I'll come with you.
You've done plenty today. We never would have gotten away from Juniper Canyon if you hadn't come up with the crazy idea of using a wind wagon, and then you handled the job of planting that dynamite. Get some rest, Browning. You've earned it.
All right. You've convinced me.
All three of them walked outside onto the porch. Kingman went to saddle a horse, and Arturo left to go back to the cabin he and Conrad were occupying for the time being. Conrad lingered on the porch of the cabin where Kingman and Selena were staying. It was a warm evening, with just a hint of coolness in the air to make it comfortable. A soft step behind him made him look over his shoulder. Selena had come out of the cabin. She stepped up to the railing beside him and rested her hands on it.
I can't believe I'm here. If Father Agony had gotten his way, by now I would have been his wife for more than a day. The first day in hell. It's thanks to you that it didn't happen, Conrad.
And thanks to Arturo and Kingman and all your friends as well. I sure didn't do it all by myself.
Maybe not, but none of it would have happened without you.
She turned to him and rested her hand on his arm.
And you've done all this for a stranger.
I'd say it was a pleasure, but that would be exaggerating, might. Let's just say I'm glad I could help and leave it at that.
I can't leave it at that, Conrad.
He suddenly realized what was about to happen and would have to put a stop to it, but she didn't give him a chance. Before he could move, Selena leaned forward, came up a little on her toes because she was almost as tall as he was, and pressed her lips to his in a kiss.
What in the world?
Selena jumped away from Conrad. Kingman strode to the bottom of the porch steps and stared at them.
Oh, Dan, please, I wasn't.
I saw what you were doing. Seems pretty obvious.
He swung his gaze toward Conrad.
And you, Browning. I reckon you lied to my face earlier. I wouldn't have known if I hadn't come back to get some extra ammo before I started out to the pass.
You're wrong, Kingman. Nothing happened here except Selena was thanking me for my help. That's all it was.
Thanking you? Is that what you call it? Looked to me like she was about to thank you right in the bed. Was that story you told me about being a grieving widower a lie? Or do you just not give a damn about your wife's memory?
You're not thinking straight. If I was going to make a play for your woman, I wouldn't do it right out here in the open where anybody could see us like you just did. Now, would I?
You thought I'd already ridden out to the pass. You thought nobody else was around.
Oh, Dan, that's not true. You've gotten the wrong idea. Oh, maybe I was too impulsive. But I was just talking to Mr. Browning and I felt so much gratitude to him for everything he's done. I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything, I swear.
She glanced at Conrad.
Oh, no offense.
None taken, I promise you.
Well, this is sweet as all get out, but I don't believe you. Either of you. There's nothing I can do about it now because we need everybody to help us beat Hyssop and Leatherwood. But I promise you, Browning, when this is over, you and I will settle this.
If you're bound and determined to make a fool of yourself, I suppose I can't stop you.
Conrad stood and watched as Kingman turned and stalked off into the darkness.
Oh, what have I done? I never meant for this to happen. I never meant to hurt either of you.
Maybe he'll cool off by morning.
No, you don't know Dan as well as I do. Once he gets his mind set on something, he won't change it.
He decided he was wrong to try to kill me and Arturo.
Yes, but you forced him to change his mind by saving his life. And mine.
Who knows what tomorrow will bring?
While he couldn't answer that question fully, he had a pretty good idea of some of the things the new day would bring. Blood and destruction and death. Conrad was up before dawn the next morning. When he left Arturo sleeping in the other bunk and went outside, he didn't see Kingman anywhere. But he didn't look for the man either. There was no point in going out of his way for a confrontation. He saddled a horse and rode up to the pass. A man holding a rifle stepped out from behind a boulder to challenge him, then lowered the weapon as he recognized Conrad.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Browning.
Any sign of Hyssop and Leatherwood?
No, it's been mighty quiet all night. I reckon they'll be here before the day's over, though.
I think you're right.
Conrad looked at the fuses hanging down the walls of the pass. Everything appeared to be just like he'd left it the day before. The red cylinders of dynamite were hidden in the cracks where he had placed them, and the fuses themselves were almost the same color as the rock walls, so they weren't very noticeable. Of course, once the fuses started burning, the sputtering sparks they gave off would be visible, but Conrad hoped the avenging angels would be charging into the pass in such heat of battle they wouldn't see the fuses until it was too late. He rode back down to the settlement to get some breakfast and found that Arturo had gotten up while he was gone and started a pot of coffee boiling on the stove in the cabin they were using. The coffee came from their supplies that had been left in the buggy, as did the bacon Arturo was frying to go with flapjacks.
How does the situation look this morning?
No sign of Hyssop and Leatherwood yet. It's just a matter of time, though. As soon as I've eaten, I'm riding back up to the pass, and I'll stay there until they show up. I'm going to be the one to light those fuses.
Is young Mr. Kingman aware of that?
I don't care what he's aware of. Some things he thinks he knows, he's got all wrong.
Ah, yes, the kiss. I'm not absolutely convinced that he's wrong about that. Although, of course, it's not really my place to say so.
Heard about it, did you?
I suspect everyone in the community has.
Wait a minute. What did you mean when you said you weren't sure Kingman was wrong about what happened?
Well, I'm not exactly the most astute observer of human behavior in the world, but I have been around a lot of people in my line of work. And from what I've seen, I'm convinced Miss Webster does indeed have romantic feelings for you.
That's crazy. She's married to Kingman.
Not officially. As Mr. Kingman himself admitted, they simply declared themselves married. There's nothing really binding about it, either legally or religiously. Technically, Miss Webster is still free to be with whomever she chooses. And at the moment, she feels a great deal of gratitude to you. I suggest that it has influenced her emotions to the point where she is mistaking that gratitude for something else. Add to that a degree of physical attraction, and you have a very confused young woman who is thinking with her heart, not her head. Coffee?
Yeah.
Maybe Arturo was right, but Conrad didn't like to think so. If Selena actually had fallen for him, it could only complicate things. Once Paradise Valley, if that's what they were going to call the place, was safe from Hyssop and his bloodthirsty avenging angels, it would be a good idea for him and Arturo to get out of there as quickly as possible. If they could get out after the pass was blocked, he amended. He was convinced there had to be another way in and out of the valley. There'd been no chance to explore it fully. The idea of being stuck there was unacceptable, and not just because of the potential awkwardness with Selena and Kingman. Frank and Vivian were still out there somewhere. His children, his lost twins, the two youngsters who were depending on him, waiting for him, whether they knew it or not. He would never give up looking for them. By the time he finished eating and went back outside, more people were moving around. He spotted Kingman saddling a horse and went over to him. Kingman glanced at Conrad, then deliberately looked away. His face was set in cold, stony lines.
I've already been up to the pass. No sign of Hyssop and Leatherwood yet.
They'll be here.
I know. I'm headed back up there now. I want to be ready to light those fuses when the time comes.
I'm lighting the fuses.
We talked about this. It's too dangerous, and folks here in the valley need you too much, especially Selena.
Kingman turned sharply toward him.
If I get killed, that means you and Selena can be together without having to worry about me. That works out better for both of you.
No, it doesn't. I've told you, there's nothing between us, and I'm not staying here. I'm heading for San Francisco as soon as I can.
Why don't you take her with you? She'll make a good Gentile slut.
Conrad's hands clenched instinctively into fists. He didn't want Kingman talking about Selena that way, even though he had no real feelings for her except some sympathy and mild affection. Kingman appeared to be on the verge of striking out as well, and the feeling of imminent violence was thick in the air. Conrad and Kingman jerked around at the sound of the shots and stared toward the pass. Then Kingman leaped into the saddle and kicked his horse into a gallop. At that moment, Selena stepped onto the cabin porch.
Dad!
He didn't slow down. He didn't even glance at her. Conrad didn't waste any time either. His mount was still saddled. And he swung up just as Arturo came out of the cabin.
Grab your rifle and keep it close. If they get through the pass, it'll be a fight. Yeah!
He sent his horse thundering after Kingman, who had about a 100-yard lead on him. It wasn't really a race, of course. The enemy forces wouldn't be at the pass yet. The guards had orders to start shooting as soon as Hyssop and Leatherwood came in sight. That served two purposes. It alerted everybody in the valley that trouble had arrived, and it would draw Hyssop and Leatherwood on, right into the pass, where they needed to be for the trap to work. Conrad's horse was a little faster than Kingman's mount. By the time Kingman reached the pass, Conrad was only about 50 yards behind him. Kingman rode all the way through the pass to the boulders at the other end where the guards were posted. Conrad was only a couple of heartbeats behind Kingman in dismounting. They slapped their horses with their hats, sending the animals galloping back out of the pass to safety. Grabbing their rifles, they joined the guards in the rocks. Conrad dropped into a crouch beside one of the men.
Where are they?
Down there, about half a mile.
The man pointed along the trail on the eastern side of the ridge that meandered down toward the salt flats. Conrad peered around a boulder and spotted about 24 riders. He saw smoke spurt from rifle muzzles.
Their bullets are falling short. We've got the high ground, so we've been able to reach them with a few rounds. I think we may have wounded a couple, but we haven't knocked anybody out of the fight.
You're doing fine. They don't look like they're slowing down, and we don't want them to.
As a matter of fact, the Avenging Angels were charging pretty recklessly. Conrad tried to pick out Hyssop and Leatherwood, but the distance was too great. All he could see was a group of trigger-happy killers in dusters and broad-brimmed hats.
Kingman, take these men and get out of here.
Conrad lined up a shot. He saw one of the attackers rock back in the saddle. The man managed to stay mounted, so he could have just been grazed.
Forget it. You get out, Browning. You're the one she wants, anyway.
You're crazy. You got it all wrong, Kingman.
Maybe we should all pull back. Those riders are going to be here in a couple minutes.
Go, get back to the cabins and gather everybody outside the other end of the pass. In case any of Leatherwood's men get through, you'll have to finish them off.
Both guards nodded at each other.
We can do that.
They took off at a run for their horses. Conrad and Kingman lingered at the mouth of the pass, peppering the attackers with shots, luring them on.
Blast it, get out!
Too late. You light the fuse on one side and I'll get the other.
Kingman hesitated for a second before he jerked his head in a nod. He leaped to his feet.
Let's go!
Conrad charged back through the pass beside him. Thundering hoofbeats rose behind them. Delving in his pocket, Conrad closed his hand around several lucifers he had placed there earlier. He brought the matches out as he reached the dangling fuse. He snapped one of the lucifers to life with his thumbnail and held it at the end of the fuse. The powder-laced cord caught instantly, giving off a flare of sparks and a puff of smoke. Conrad glanced toward the eastern end of the pass and saw the riders crowding into it. He whirled away from the fuse and broke into a run again, zigzagging away from the sputtering cord. He hoped the attackers were focused on his running figure and wouldn't notice the sparks from the burning fuse. A glance to his right showed him Kingman had succeeded in lighting his fuse and was racing for the western end of the pass. Suddenly, Kingman grabbed at his thigh and went down. He rolled over a couple of times and came up clutching his thigh. Blood welled between his fingers where a bullet had torn the flesh. Instead of continuing to run straight for the end of the pass, Conrad angled toward Kingman. As he dashed across the pass, he fired the Winchester on the run, throwing slugs toward the charging riders as fast as he could work the repeater's lever. Kingman waved an arm.
No! No! Get out of here, Browning!
Conrad ignored him and stopped shooting so he'd have a free hand. He barely slowed down as he hooked Kingman's arm and dragged the man to his feet. Conrad forced him to run on the wounded leg, but he managed to keep moving as bullets flew around them. Conrad's steely fingers clamped around Kingman's arm kept him from collapsing again. As they reached the mouth of the pass, Conrad glanced back and saw that all of the Avenging Angels were between the walls, strung out in a line.
Get down!
At that instant, the fuses reached their destination. Ugh. Conrad pushed himself to his hands and knees and looked around. A huge cloud of dust that looked like a massive thunderhead boiled out of the pass and climbed into the blue sky. Conrad knew the charges had worked. The men who had been trapped in the pass were all dead, and the pass itself was closed, probably for good. But his instincts were crying out to him that something was still wrong. As he struggled to his feet, he realized what it was.
Kingman! Kingman, are you all right?
Conrad stumbled over to the man, dropped to a knee, and shook his shoulder.
Hey!
Kingman stared up at Conrad dazedly.
What? I can't hear!
Take it easy! Your hearing will come back!
While Kingman waited for that to happen, Conrad checked his wounded leg. A bullet had plowed a deep, bloody furrow in the outside of the thigh, but it appeared no bones were broken. The wound needed to be cleaned and bandaged, and he would have to stay off his feet for a while, but Conrad thought he should be all right.
Braddon! Braddon, did we get them?
We got them, but can you hear me now?
Yeah, sort of. Everything sounds strange.
Conrad's ears were getting back to normal.
We got them, but there may still be a problem. I didn't see Hyssop or Leatherwood. They may not have been with the others.
Kingman struggled to a sitting position and gave a little shake of his head as if he were trying to clear some cobwebs out of it.
Hyssop and Leatherwood weren't with the rest of them? But where could they...
Conrad and Kingman looked in the direction of the settlement. Conrad lunged to his feet.
Browning, don't leave me here. I need to get down there too.
Conrad hesitated, but only for a second. Grabbing hold of Kingman's arm, he lifted the man to his feet. Their horses were nearby, looking a little spooked, but not panicking. Kingman's ride would hurt like hell with a bad leg, but it was his choice. As Conrad helped him mount up, then swung into the saddle himself, his brain was racing around four things. One, he might need Kingman's gun. Two, he had told the guards to gather the men from the valley at that end of the pass in case any of the avenging angels made it through the avalanche. Three, they weren't here. Four, something had happened to stop them from coming. Something or someone.
They found another way in!
Conrad nodded. He'd figured it out already. Fearing a trap, Hyssop had split his forces, sending some of the avenging angels to their deaths in the pass, while he and Leatherwood circled around with the rest of the men and entered the valley by another route. They had taken Ollie and the other defenders by surprise, although that smattering of gunshots testified that some of the men had been able to put up a fight. However, the gunfire had stopped, leaving an ominous silence hanging over the valley. A silence broken only by the swift rataplan of hoofbeats from the horses being ridden by Conrad and Kingman. Dust continued to billow out of the pass behind and above them as they raced toward the cabins. Conrad and Kingman suddenly hauled back on their reins. In the large open area in front of the burned ruins of Kingman's cabin, two figures stood. One was tall and slender, wore a skirt, and had long blonde hair that flowed far down her back. The other figure was shorter and stockier, even from that distance gave off an air of ugly menace. Elder Agonistes Hyssop had his left arm clenched tightly around Selena's waist, while his right hand held a long-barreled revolver that he prodded into her side.
No!
Come on! Come closer and see what your sins have wrought! Come and face the judgment and wrath of the Lord!
You're not the Lord! You're just a man! A twisted, evil little man!
I'll kill this harlot who dared to defy God's will! I swear I will, unless you do as I say!
Play along with him.
Conrad's gaze darted over the settlement. He didn't see anyone moving around, but he spotted a couple of rifle barrels sticking around cabin corners. Hyssop's men must have herded all the prisoners into one place, most likely the barn. Scattered around, the followers covered the little fanatic as he threatened Selena.
If we ride up there, he'll kill us.
If we don't, he's liable to kill Selena. He's crazy enough to do it.
You don't have to tell me.
Kingman hitched his horse into a slow walk toward Hyssop and Selena. Conrad rode alongside him.
That's far enough.
When they were about 20 feet away, both men reined in. They were close enough that Conrad could see Selena was trembling a little in Hyssop's grasp. Her eyes were wide with terror, but there was something else in them as well. After a second, Conrad recognized it as anger. She was filled with outrage that once again Father Agony was trying to control her life.
How did you get in here? This is our home.
You have no home, boy. You are an outcast. You are the banished. God has turned his face away from you, and you are forced to flee from the garden.
Juniper Canyon is about as far from the Garden of Eden as any place I can imagine. And you're about as far from God. More like the devil.
Don't blaspheme any worse than you already have. On the other hand, your soul is already damned to eternal torment in the fiery pit, so what more harm can you do? As for how I and the other servants of the Lord got into this valley of yours, you pitiful young fool. Do you think you're the only one who's ever been here? I explored every foot of this territory before the angels of the Lord led me to Juniper Canyon. I knew this valley was here long before you did, and I know every way in and out of it. It was child's play to come around from the other direction, enter the valley, and take your men by surprise.
But I don't understand. If you knew this valley was here, why did you settle in Juniper Canyon? The water and the soil and the grass are all better over here. This is paradise.
Of course it is. You think I wanted a ready-made paradise for my people? How would they ever learn to appreciate what God has given them if they didn't have to struggle for it? I looked at this place and saw nothing but Satan's temptation. I looked at Juniper Canyon and saw how hard work could transform it into a place where my people could live and make their homes without ever taking anything for granted. I saw a place that'd be ours because we fought the Indians and the elements and the earth itself for everything that it gave us.
You're a madman. What are you going to do now?
Well, I'm going to carry out the Lord's will, of course. You and all the rest of your sinful followers must be made examples of. You'll be taken back to Juniper Canyon and executed. The two Gentiles will kill here. They won't set foot in our home again. As for the women, Sisters Dora, Rachel, and Caroline will be returned to their families and given in marriage to their intended husbands.
Hyssop dug the gun in Selena's side.
No. Oh.
This one has been too defiled to ever be a proper wife for a prophet. I tried to overlook her sins, I really did, but I cannot. She will live among us as one shunned, a servant who will never be spoken to or acknowledged for the rest of her days. It is a fitting punishment.
Where's Leatherwood?
That valiant warrior in the Lord's service has gone to his reward. Jackson insisted on accompanying his men through the pass, even though we suspected there might be an ambush. We didn't expect anything as craven as the mass murder you committed here today, though.
Conrad hadn't spotted Leatherwood during those few minutes of bloody chaos in the pass. He hadn't been leading the charge, but his horse could have fallen behind some of the others. If he had been in the middle of the pack, Conrad wouldn't have seen him.
Jackson Leatherwood's death is one more sin for which the Lord will exact vengeance. And the time for that vengeance has come. You men throw your guns aside. We have a long ride back to Juniper Canyon.
Don't do it, Dan. Don't give up.
But Selena, he'll kill you. He's loco enough to do it.
I am the living embodiment of God's will. That is all.
Let him kill me. Better yet, you do it. Or you, Conrad. Draw your guns. Kill me and then kill him. He has to be stopped, even if it costs my life. All of our lives. Kill me so he dies too.
I can't do it.
Of course you cannot. I'm under divine protection. The angels watch over me and protect me.
Suddenly, Selena started to twist violently in Hyssop's grip. He couldn't hold her. Both her hands wrapped around the gun barrel and wrenched it away from her side. She wrestled the weapon out of his hand and grabbed the butt, slipping her finger through the trigger guard. Instead of turning the gun on Hyssop, she lifted it toward her own head.
Daniel, I love you. Kill him!
Selena, no!
Conrad knew the other gunmen were more dangerous than Hyssop, who was disarmed at the moment and not that much of a fighting man to begin with. But he also knew the Avenging Angels would hesitate to shoot if the Elder was in the line of fire, so he drove his horse forward and left the saddle in a diving tackle. He caught the fleeing Hyssop around the waist and pushed him to the ground. Conrad crashed down on top of the smaller man and pulled his gun.
Hold your fire!
Conrad pointed the Colt at Hyssop and eared back the hammer. His thumb was all that kept it from falling. Even if the Avenging Angels riddled him with bullets, the gun in his hand would go off and splatter Hyssop's brains all over the ground. Conrad looked at Kingman and Selena. Kingman had flung himself out of his saddle, fallen to his knees, and gathered up Selena's limp body in his arms. Her head hung back so Conrad could see the bloody streak along her temple. Tears rolled down Kingman's face.
No! No, no, please! God, no!
Kingman, Dan, listen to me. I think she's just creased. She's still breathing, Kingman.
Kingman blinked and shook his head as Conrad's urgent words finally got through to him. He looked down at the wound on Selena's head, then lowered his ear to her chest and listened with a tense, hopeful expression on his face. After a moment, he jerked his head up.
She's alive! I hear her heart beating!
Get her out of here. There's no time to waste. Get her to cover now!
The Avenging Angels were holding their fire for the moment because of the threat to Hyssop, but that might not last. He had been stunned when Conrad tackled him, and so far he was just lying there, semi-conscious. When his wits came back to him, he might order his men to shoot anyway, even if it meant he wouldn't survive. He was crazy enough to do such a thing. Staggering because of his wounded leg, Kingman struggled to his feet with Selena cradled in his arms. He stumbled towards some trees about 50 yards away. The cabins would have provided better cover, but there was no way of knowing which ones the Avenging Angels were lurking behind.
Listen to me, you men! Come out in the open now and throw down your guns, or I'll kill Hyssop!
At that moment, Hyssop tipped the balance by starting to squirm. The Elder jerked his head up.
Kill him! Kill the Gentile!
Conrad threw himself to the side, knowing the Avenging Angels would follow Hyssop's order. Bullets whipped past him as he desperately rolled for the nearest cover, the ruins of Kingman's cabin. A shot blasted closer, and a slug burned along the top of his arm as he surged to his feet. Hyssop had scrambled on all fours over to the long-barreled revolver Selena had taken from him and then dropped. He clutched it in both hands, fired as he knelt in the dirt. Conrad felt the wind rip of the bullet pass his ear. He triggered his Colt and returned. Still on his knees, Hyssop bent over backwards as both bullets drove into his chest. Conrad caught only a glimpse of Hyssop's final seconds of life. As the Elder was dying, Conrad was flinging himself behind what was left of the foundations of Kingman's cabin. The Avenging Angels stopped shooting, shocked to see Hyssop's lifeless body. He had believed he was protected from harm by his status as a prophet, and surely some of the Avenging Angels had believed that too. But it wouldn't keep them from trying to exact vengeance, Conrad thought. Taking advantage of the lull, he thumbed fresh cartridges into the empty chambers of his gun cylinder. With a full wheel, he waited for the attack he knew wouldn't be long in coming. It wasn't. Men darted out from behind cabins, firing as they came, and charged toward the burned-out cabin. Conrad lifted himself enough to return the fire, saw at least a dozen men coming toward him with guns blazing. He could stop a few of them. In fact, he knocked a couple off their feet with his first two shots, but he couldn't prevent them from overrunning his position and killing him. Kingman pitched in, firing from the trees where he had retreated with Selena, but he was a little too far away to be very effective with a handgun. Once Conrad was taken care of, the Avenging Angels would go after him, probably kill all the prisoners in a frenzy of revenge. Before the morning was over, Paradise Valley would more likely be Slaughter Valley. Conrad drew a bead, spilled another man with a well-placed shot. Glancing toward the barn, his heart leaped as Ollie Barnstable emerged from the building with a rifle in his hands, fired again. The bullet smashed between the shoulder blades of one of the Avenging Angels and drove him forward on his face, where he landed in a limp, lifeless sprawl. More men raced out of the barn, firing handguns and rifles. The prisoners had gotten free. They joined the battle, making the odds a lot more even. Through swirling clouds of dust and gun smoke, Conrad caught a glimpse of Arturo firing a shotgun, cutting down two of the Avenging Angels. Leaping to his feet, Conrad ran toward the fight. From the corner of his eye, he saw Kingman hobbling into battle as well. Orange tongues of flame flew from gun barrels. Conrad whirled through the chaos, firing until the hammer of his gun clicked on an empty chamber. As one of the duster-clad avenging angels loomed up in front of him, Conrad crashed his revolver down on the man's head. The man collapsed to the ground, out cold. Conrad picked up the rifle the man dropped and brought it to his shoulder. He shot with the Winchester, drilled a gunman through the head. And just like that, it was over. An eerie silence settled over the battleground as tendrils of powder smoke floated here and there, carried lazily on the breeze. Conrad looked over at Arturo and Ollie and saw they were both bleeding from minor wounds, but appeared to be all right otherwise. A glance the other way told him Kingman was barely staying on his feet.
Ollie, help Dan. Selena's back in those trees. He can show you. She's hurt, but I think she'll be all right. Arturo, you and I better check on Hyssop's men. We don't want any surprises.
No, we certainly don't.
You're turning into a real Triggerite.
I've had an exceptional teacher.
Only three Avenging Angels were still alive, and one was gut-shot and wouldn't live much longer. Conrad had some of the men from Paradise Valley tie up the other two.
Don't kill them. You're going to need somebody to send back to Juniper Canyon with an offer of a truce.
Do you really think those people will agree to that?
I think they might. Hyssop and Leatherwood were the ones holding everything together over there, and they're both dead. If Kingman offers to leave them alone and everybody lets everybody else live in peace from now on, they might accept it. And if they don't, nobody will be coming through the pass anymore. Kingman needs to find all the other ways in and out of the valley and make sure they're guarded all the time.
That sounds like a rather nerve-wracking way to live.
People on the frontier have been doing things like that for a long time. It's part of the price folks pay for freedom.
They walked to the cabin Kingman and Selena had been using. Ollie was cleaning the wound on Kingman's leg.
Selena's in bed. She'll probably have a pretty bad headache when she wakes up, and she'll have to take it easy for a few days, but I think she'll be all right. The bullet barely clipped her head.
She was trying to kill herself so she'd be out of the way and we could take care of Hyssop. She thought she was about to die. Kingman, what was the last thing she said?
Kingman grimaced and looked down at his bloody leg.
That she loved me.
That's right. I hope you know you don't have anything to worry about where Selena and I are concerned. You can forget any kind of crazy notion about having some sort of showdown with me.
I already have. Blasted, you saved my life out there in the pass. Again. I can't very well have a shootout with you now.
You'd lose if you did. Mr. Browning is quite the Triggerite.
You like that word, don't you?
It has a certain ring to it.
Conrad turned back to the others.
How did you get loose, Ollie?
Well, Elder Hyssop left three men watching us when he went out with the others to wait for you and Dan. Turned out that wasn't enough. When all the shooting started, they got distracted and I was able to jump a couple of them and bang their heads together. I guess I banged them a little too hard. They're both dead.
A well-deserved fate. While Ollie was doing that, the third guard took a shot at him and put a crease in his side. But I and a couple of other prisoners were able to overpower him. Somehow in the struggle, the man was fatally wounded with his own gun. We took their weapons and came to take part in the altercation.
It's a good thing you did. Another 30 seconds and they would have been shooting me full of holes.
Oh, I doubt that. You would have thought of some clever method of turning the situation to your advantage, sir. You always do.
Conrad appreciated the vote of confidence, but he knew Arturo was wrong. He didn't have any sort of divine protection any more than Agonistes Hyssop did. One of these days, a bullet would find him and end his life, just as his slugs had ended Hyssop's. Unless he gave up the sort of life he had been leading since Rebel's death. Unless he put away his guns for good and went back to being a businessman. A businessman and a father. But before he could do that, he had to find his children. Pamela had already left a number of traps for him along the way as he searched for the twins. She had hired men to kill him if he came too close to locating them, and Conrad fully expected he would run into more trouble. The trail was getting short, though. It wasn't all that far to San Francisco. Unless Pamela had doubled back, little Frank and Vivian had to be somewhere between Utah and the Pacific Coast. Maybe, even quite possibly, in San Francisco itself. The city by the bay was big enough to hide a lot of things, including two young children. Pamela's twisted brain might have found the idea of hiding them there right under the noses of Conrad's attorneys and friends particularly amusing.
Sir, you look as if you are a million miles away.
No, not a million miles.
Just the distance to San Francisco, the last leg of the long, hard, bloody trail. A couple of days had passed since the explosions that closed the pass forever and the bloody battle that followed. The bodies had been buried, and Kingman had sent the two surviving Avenging Angels back to Juniper Canyon with a letter he had written to Jason Hyssop, Father Agony's oldest son, and the one who presumably would take over the leadership of the community. In the letter, Kingman had followed Conrad's suggestion and proposed a truce between Juniper Canyon and Paradise Valley.
You could stay longer, you know. You'd be welcome.
That's true. You can stay in Paradise Valley as long as you like, both of you.
We appreciate the offer. Arturo and I need to be heading on down the trail, though.
I understand. You have to find your missing children.
Selena leaned her head against his shoulder and rested a hand lightly on her belly.
Daniel, you won't have to go very far to find your child. He's right here.
Kingman's eyes widened as he turned his head to look at her.
You mean?
That's right.
Congratulations. Hope the little one is raised in a nice, peaceful home.
He will be. Or she. Either way, I'm going to do everything in my power to make peace. This valley has known enough war.
Amen to that.
Conrad stepped off the porch. He climbed up on a big roan with a white star on its face. He didn't know what had happened to the black gelding, but Ollie, who had a knack for horseflesh, had assured Conrad that the roan was a fine animal. A team of good horses was hitched to the buggy. Arturo was on the seat, holding the reins. Selena stepped down from the porch and leaned into the buggy to plant a kiss on Arturo's cheek.
Good luck to you. And thank you for everything you did for me. For all of us.
I assure you, Miss Webster. I was merely trying to stay alive under difficult circumstances.
Of course.
Selena turned to Conrad.
Conrad, I don't know what to say.
Then don't say anything.
Kingman had followed her down from the porch. He shook hands with Conrad and Arturo, and then put his left arm around Selena's shoulders and raised his right arm in farewell as they turned the roan and the buggy and rode away from the cabin. Ollie was waiting in front of the community barn. Conrad leaned down to shake hands with the big man.
You're the rock this place is built on, Ollie. I'm counting on you to take care of everybody and help Dan make it a real home for your people.
I sure will, Mr. Browning. Good luck. I hope you find your kids.
So do I, Ollie. So do I.
Conrad and Arturo headed for the far end of the valley. Some exploring had revealed a narrow gash in the mountainside leading up to a stretch of tableland that curved around the peak. That was how Hyssop and his men had gotten into the valley a couple of days earlier. The opening was wide enough for a couple of men on horseback or for the buggy, but that was all. It would be relatively easy for the inhabitants of the valley to keep it guarded around the clock if that proved to be necessary. At the top of the cut, Conrad reined in and turned in the saddle to look back at the beautiful valley behind them. Arturo brought the buggy to a stop.
Do you regret leaving?
Not at all. This isn't my home and never could be. But I hope it's a good one for them.
Over the next couple of days, Conrad and Arturo worked their way back down and out of the mountains and finally came to the Southern Pacific Railroad again. Conrad questioned if they were still in Utah or if they had crossed the border into Nevada. It didn't really matter, he supposed, but he was curious anyway. He also wondered when they would come to a settlement. They had a few supplies left, but they were going to have to restock their provisions soon. Either that or live off the game he was able to shoot. And considering the mostly barren region didn't have a lot of wildlife, that was a chancy proposition. Late in the afternoon of the second day, he spotted some buildings along the tracks far ahead of him.
Looks like a little town up there.
Do you think there might be a hotel?
Never can tell. It's possible, since the railroad goes through there. You want to sleep in a real bed again, Arturo? It's only been a couple of days since we left Paradise Valley.
Yes, but the mattresses those people use are filled with corn shucks. They're certainly not the most comfortable mattresses I've ever slept on.
Well, we'll see. I wouldn't get your hopes up too high if I was you.
They never do. That way the only surprises are pleasant ones.
When they came closer to the settlement, they saw that it wasn't a very big one. There was an adobe depot building next to the tracks, with a short street stretching north a few blocks. The town had a couple of general stores, which meant he and Arturo could pick up some provisions. There were three saloons, a blacksmith shop, a livery stable, a few other businesses, and maybe a dozen houses. Some made out of adobe, the others from weathered, sun-faded lumber. It wasn't a particularly pleasant-looking place, but Conrad was glad to see it. They went to the livery stable first. A short, stocky Mexican who introduced himself as Ricardo was glad to take care of Conrad's roan and the buggy team.
You must have come far. You have the look of men who are well-traveled.
Too far. But we still have farther to go.
Is there a hotel in this town?
Sure. The Humboldt House. It's not too fancy, but the bugs won't bite you too bad. No, senor. I'm joking. There are no bugs.
The look he gave Conrad behind Arturo's back said that maybe there were a few bugs.
Which mercantile is the best?
Trafford won't cheat you. The others, oh, you got to watch them a little closer.
We're obliged. Arturo, why don't you go to the store and see about ordering supplies, then get us rooms at the hotel. I'm going over to the train station.
You're catching the train? You want to sell this buggy and these horses?
No, I just need to talk to the station master.
Conrad and Arturo split up, Arturo heading for Trafford's general store, while Conrad walked toward the depot. Stepping inside, he realized the thick adobe walls kept the building cool. It was a small depot, serving a small settlement. He figured one man probably served as station master, ticket clerk, baggage handler, and telegrapher. Conrad found him behind a narrow window with a wicket in it. The man was bald, except for a fringe of white hair around his ears and the back of his head. He introduced himself as Percy.
Have you been around here long? What's the name of this place, anyway?
Yeah, why, this is Cavendish. Cavendish, Nevada. And I've been here as long as the depot has. 11 years come August.
You've been in charge of the station that whole time?
Yes, sir. Right down to sweeping out the place.
I know this is a long shot, but do you recall a woman who came through on the train about 3 years ago, traveling with a couple small children and a nanny?
Now, how in the world would I remember something like that? Wait a minute. You don't mean Mrs. Browning, do you?
Mrs. Browning?
Yeah, sure. The wife of a fella named Conrad Browning. He's a big stockholder in the line, so I went out of my way to make sure Mrs. Browning was comfortable while she and her kids was here. They wouldn't have stopped over at all, except one of the regulator valves on the engine went bad and the company had to send for another one. We had to park the train on the siding for a couple of days while we were waiting for it. Didn't want an important lady like Mrs. Browning to have to stay in a Pullman compartment when the train wasn't even moving, so line put her up in a hotel. Yeah, what a nice lady.
So she did have the children with her?
Yep. A little boy and a little girl, as I recall. And that woman traveling with her to help out with the kids. Well, she was nice, too. Really devoted to them youngins. Almost like they were her own.
So when the locomotive was repaired, the train went on west?
Yep. San Francisco bound. Say, why all the questions, mister? What business is it of yours?
I used to be friends with Mr. and Mrs. Browning.
Do you need a ticket?
Conrad was tempted. Surely Pamela hadn't come so far west with the twins, then not taken them on to San Francisco with her. He could be there in a day and enlist Turnbuckle and Stafford in the search. He could afford to hire an army of private detectives to scour the city for any sign of the children. But there was a slim chance that Pamela had hidden them somewhere between where he was, Cavendish, Nevada, and the coast, so Conrad couldn't afford to risk bypassing any of the settlements.
No, that's all right. Thanks anyway.
He went to the Humboldt House and found Arturo waiting for him in the lobby.
I've rented two rooms for us, and Mr. Trafford will have our supplies ready for us first thing in the morning.
Good job. Talked to the station master and found out Pamela still had the twins with her when she passed through here.
He remembered her after all this time.
She was pretending to be my wife. That got her some special treatment.
I see.
And say we get some supper. Is there a dining room here in the hotel?
No, but the desk clerk recommended a restaurant down the street called Faraday's. He said it was the best food in Cavendish. I'm not sure how sterling a recommendation that really is.
Let's find out.
Dusk was settling over Cavendish when they stepped outside Faraday's. Conrad paused just outside the door.
Heathens! Murdering heathens!
Instinct sent Conrad's hand flashing toward his gun as he twisted toward the sound. He saw a man's shape loom up. Conrad saw the man's scarred, hate-filled face. Jackson Leatherwood wasn't dead after all. The Avenging Angel was back.
Ah, heathens!
Close beside Conrad, Arturo stumbled back a step. As Leatherwood charged them, Conrad took aim with his Colt and pulled the trigger. Leatherwood's head jerked back as the slug caught him in the forehead, bored through his brain, and exploded out the back of his skull. He crumpled bonelessly to the ground. Conrad put the pieces together and figured out what had happened. Leatherwood hadn't joined in the charge of the Avenging Angels through the pass after all. At the last moment, something caused Leatherwood to hold back. He had escaped the avalanche and escaped death, then followed Conrad and Arturo to Cavendish to have his vengeance on them. Conrad knew it, but didn't care about it. Whirling toward Arturo, he saw his friend was sitting on the ground, hunched forward.
Arturo!
Conrad holstered his Colt and dropped to his knees, got an arm around Arturo's shoulders to hold him up.
Arturo, how bad is it?
I'm wounded rather grievously, sir.
A dark worm of blood crawled out of the corner of Arturo's mouth.
You'll find the children. Promise me. You'll carry on.
Don't worry about that right now. Just hang on.
Conrad looked up to see the hostler from the livery stable running toward them.
Ricardo, is there a doctor here?
Ricardo stopped and stared at Leatherwood's body for a second, then turned to Conrad and Arturo.
See, there is a doctor, but he's an old man and not much good.
Get him, quick!
All right. The other man...
He's dead. He won't ever hurt anybody again.
Oh.
Ricardo jerked his head in a nod and ran off in search of the doctor. People were coming out of Faraday's as well as from the stores and saloons, drawn by the sound of the shots. They wanted to see what was going on, so they began circling like buzzards. Conrad felt Arturo shivering as he held on to him.
The doctor's on his way. Don't you die on me, Arturo. Don't you die!
I will endeavor not to, sir.
More blood dripped from his mouth as he hugged himself. Conrad tipped his head back and looked up at the sky, which had darkened from blue to purple to black as the stars came out. Those stars mocked him with their peaceful twinkling, looking down on the scene of death and tragedy as if it meant nothing to them. Which it didn't, Conrad knew. But it meant something to him.
Don't die.
Percy looked up behind his wicket as Conrad stopped in front of the ticket window.
I heard about what happened to your friend, mister. I'm sorry. How's he doing?
He's alive, but he may not be for long unless I can get him to better medical care than what you have here. The doctor says it'll be a risk for him to travel, but getting him to a real hospital is the only chance he has. When's the next westbound?
You're in luck. It'll be through in about an hour. You want tickets?
2 tickets for Carson City.
The Loner, Book 10, The Blood of Renegades, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, Elizabeth Jernigan, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Patrick Bussink, Anastasia Wilson, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Jeff Allen, Joe Brack, Bradley Smith, Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, Gregory Gorton, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickins series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in Graphic Audio.
Smoke Jensen's wife is shot. He will carve a bloody path through all of Colorado, leading straight to the heart of the villain. If you think you know violence, you ain't seen nothing yet. Don't miss The Visceral Revenge in The Mountain Man number 39. Assault of the Mountain Man. Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.